They have green backs, pink bellies, and are only about 2 inches in diameter. The green crab is an invasive predator that's been destroying clam and scallop populations from South Carolina to Maine since they were introduced here 2 centuries ago. How to deal with it? Well, some New England chefs are looking for ways to put this invasive species on the menu. Reporter Emily Corwin explains.
I'm probably going to upset some of my fisherman friends.
Brendan Vesey is the chef at The Joinery, an upscale restaurant in Newmarket, New Hampshire.
Tuna is delicious, and I understand why we catch it, but I currently don't serve it.
Why? He says eating that one big predator at the top of the food chain throws off the whole ecosystem. So instead of seared tuna steaks on his menu, it's
invasive green crab bisque with seared fish, fresh peas, and house-made bacon.
That's right, invasive green crab bisque for $10. That creepy sound is 20 pounds of green crabs clawing and crawling in a plastic bucket. Fisherman Everett Leach is dropping them off here at the restaurant. As he stops one from escaping, another crawls right out.
Keep an eye on them. They're runners.
Green crabs are native to Europe and Africa, but they arrived in New England 200 years ago. They eat a lot of things fishermen are after. Clams, oysters, mussels, softshell crabs, scallops. The Maine Clammers Association describes green crabs on their website as a cancer, literally eating away at Maine's marine resources. That's a quote.
Quantity is not a problem. There's millions of them.
VC pays $2 a pound for these guys. That's a third what he'd pay for steamer clams and a ninth what he'd pay for scallops.
All right, guys. It's your time.
Immediately, he starts throwing the crabs into 2 big stock pots.
I'm going to put them in a hot pot with some oil in the bottom and toast the shells up, and then I'll add liquid to make stock.
For now, stock is about the only thing you can make with these guys. VC says you could spend hours shelling all 20 pounds of these crabs and end up with only a half pound of meat.
And they're really small, and they're really, really hard. The shell's rock hard.
The stock is green and pungent, and it tastes sweet and rich. VC hopes someday, though, he can do something more with these little critters than just make soup. With blue crabs, for example, that's the kind you find in Maryland, fishermen have figured out how to catch them just before they shed their shells, then harvest them while they're naked. That's softshell crab.
If we had those, we could probably get rid of green crabs in a year, because everybody wants to eat that.
It's been 200 years since the New England shoreline was free of these invasive predators. Without them, think of all the moneymakers, the oysters and scallops there'd be to go around. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Emily Corwin in Concord.
Now, presidential politics. There's less than 4 weeks to go before the opening of first the Republican and then the Democratic national conventions, and there's growing speculation about who the presumptive nominees might pick as their running mates. Joining us to talk about the VP choice and other campaign issues, especially the shakeup in the Trump campaign, are our political analyst, Republican Todd Domke. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning.
And Democrat Dan Payne. Good morning, Dan.
Morning, Bob.
Before we start naming names, give us some bullet points on what the campaigns are aiming for in a VP pick and why. We know political experience is usually on the list. Someone who would bring battleground state strength to the ticket might also be important. And what else? Dan, start with a Hillary Clinton campaign. What's important?
Well, as I see it, she has one major responsibility, to pick someone who can exploit all of the advantages that Donald Trump has given her with Hispanic voters. Trump attacked Mexican immigrants, saying they were murderers and rapists, and he questioned recently an American-born federal judge in the Trump University case. He questioned whether he could be fair because his parents are Mexican. So she should pick someone who will attract Latino votes in large numbers and forget seducing the Bernie Sanders people.
All right. Todd, what's important for Donald Trump in a vice president? And is his challenge actually trying to find someone credible and willing to serve under a President Trump?
That's right. Trump's challenge is to have real balance on the ticket. The running mate should be sane, knowledgeable, not bigoted, and not orange. So Trump advisors would be happy if the running mate could help keep Trump from veering off into crazy land, talking about conspiracy theories and making wild accusations. A VP choice who could help guide him into talking about real issues instead of just attacking people. Early on, Republican leaders hoped he'd pick a woman or Hispanic or African-American to offset his having driven up his unfavorable ratings with every demographic group except bitter old white men who love reality TV. But the problem is that prospective Republican leaders who could do that, who have that kind of broad appeal, don't want to run with him. They won't even endorse him.
All right, let's get to some names. We're talking about Trump, so let's start there. Who do you think is on the list, or who should be on the list, Todd?
Well, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich is on the list. Chris Christie might be the governor of New Jersey. Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions is probably on the list. Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon. But I don't think any of the potential running mates would broaden Trump's appeal. Possible running mates who could actually boost a Trump ticket are popular officials who probably would not accept the job. South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, New Mexico's Governor Susana Martinez, John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, Florida Senator Marco Rubio. They've all been very critical of Trump, so they'd lose credibility if they had to turn around and start praising him.
Just a few days ago, I heard former Massachusetts U.S. Senator Scott Brown mention again as a possible VP candidate for Trump. Do either of you think we should take that seriously?
Well, it's possible. Crazier things have happened in this race already. Trump likes him personally. But still, Brown having lost two Senate races in a row against female candidates wouldn't make Republicans too optimistic about their chances.
All right, let's talk about Elizabeth Warren a little bit as we talk about Hillary Clinton's vice presidential choices, so to speak. If anything, Clinton may be hampered by too many possibilities. Elizabeth Warren is certainly on the list. She's become an attack dog for the Democratic Party. Here is Warren in New Hampshire over the weekend going after Donald Trump.
Every day it becomes clearer that he is just a small, insecure money grubber who doesn't care about anyone or anything that doesn't have the Trump name splashed all over it. Every day it becomes clearer that he is a thin-skinned racist bully.
Though she's really tough and appeals to the progressive side of the Democratic Party, which might mean Bernie Sanders backing, you don't think that Elizabeth Warren is the right choice for Hillary Clinton, Dan? Why?
Well, I can't think of a single thing that Joe Biden accomplished while he was vice president for nearly 8 years. Elizabeth Warren is only 1 year younger than Hillary Clinton, and she has things she wants to do in the Senate. I think she'd be miserable as vice president, standing behind Hillary Clinton, having to check everything she says with the White House, and going to funerals that the president doesn't want to attend. Besides, it gives Charlie Baker a chance to appoint a Republican to fill Elizabeth Warren's Senate seat.
All right, who should be on Clinton's list, Ann?
Well, my favorite is Tom Perez. He's Secretary of Labor. He's a first-generation American. His parents came from the Dominican Republic. He lives in Maryland, but he campaigned for Clinton in Virginia and Washington State, Arizona, Iowa, and New York. And he recently gave a speech in Virginia that blistered Trump so thoroughly that a crowd of 700 Democrats jumped to their feet to give him a standing ovation. Tom Perez.
All right. Before we go, I want to talk just a little bit. Quick question about the Trump campaign. Pretty dramatic shakeup in the campaign last night or yesterday. He fired his extremely loyal campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski from Lowell, who had dismissed calls for Trump to work closer with leaders of the Republican Party and start acting more presidential, even as Trump's poll numbers have begun to drop. And that came just before the fundraising numbers came out last night, which show Trump way, way behind Hillary Clinton in fundraising. Is a change in approach coming for the Trump campaign, Todd Nomke?
Yes, he's been spiraling down in the polls and these terrible fundraising numbers, the lack of organization, the lack of staff. So firing Corey Lewandowski probably was kind of a diversionary tactic, trying to make him the scapegoat. But, you know, 2 months ago, the party was coalescing around Trump. But for the past 6 weeks, Trump's narcissism took over. He wouldn't change for the Trump that his fans found so appealing. He kept making foolish and bigoted remarks. And the party's leaders and grassroots conservatives have been backing away from him. So the coalescing around him has turned into unraveling of the campaign, and now there's even talk of a revolt by delegates at the convention. That's not likely to succeed, but it indicates how much he's been in free fall.
Dan Payne.
Well, Trump doesn't seem to realize that the general election is completely different than the primaries. It's like going from running a traveling circus to launching a chain of Walmarts. Trump thinks he can do it all by himself, and now he just fired his original top aide. And Trump's biggest problem isn't his aides, it's his mouth.
All right, Dan Payne, thanks a lot for coming in this morning. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again a lot as the campaign moves forward toward the conventions.
You're welcome.
Same to you, Todd Domke.
Good to be with you, Bob.